Welcome to Kick-Ass Radio, hosted by Jo Sainsbury, founder of Kick-Ass Women. Join Jo over the next hour as she shares stories and conversations that are both inspiring and empowering. Having spent over 30 years in the corporate sector, Jo Sainsbury kicked off her heels and became a coal train driver working in the rail and mining industry. It has been her goal ever since to empower and support women who are considering a career change into an industry role, making the transition as smooth as possible. Jo is a walking, talking success story of how taking the plunge into industry can open up a world of opportunity. And you can do it too. If you're a woman working in industry or considering a career change, this is the radio station for you. Let's get into this episode of Kick-Ass Radio.
Hey there, Glowgetters. Welcome to the Kick-Ass Radio Show. Am I excited for today's show? You bet your kick-ass I am. Here's a grand statement for you, and one which we're going to tap in on today, and that being, want a trade job done professionally, on time and with great communication? Get a woman to do it. Now, female tradies not only exist, but women are increasingly likely to take up a trade as a career, and they are gaining high feedback scores on the quality of their work. So when you think of the trades, you may still imagine a cadre of men tromping around in their overalls and tool belts. To a certain extent, that's true, but women still make up only 2% of the trade workforce here in Australia. So women can't be tradies? What's a chick doing with a wrench? She doesn't look strong enough to be a builder. Girls shouldn't work in such tough, dirty jobs. Any of these sound familiar to you? Most young women decide against a career in trades for various reasons, and this has a negative effect on productivity and growth in skilled industries. So why are lady tradies better on the tools? Not only are lady tradies growing in numbers, they are proving to be better on the tools. So some might ask, what are skilled trades? Now, skilled trades play an active and important role in the daily lives of people and society as a whole. Without skilled trades, we wouldn't have electrical wiring and access to electricity in homes and offices, nor would we have plumbing or the ability to repair our vehicles. The expertise of skilled tradespeople is vital to construction, automotive, and service trades, all of which are vital to sustaining everyday lives, as well as continuing growth and development. Now, in 2022, women once again should consider making a career in skilled trades, a world where six figures are attainable, and where training and qualifications can be attained in a much more broader spectrum. Now, although more women are pursuing careers in skilled trades, the current skills gap is calling for more creative and drastic solutions. There is still plenty of work to be done and not enough skilled women to go around. So even though there are still some would-be female apprentices who wonder whether or not the career path is right for them, while the skilled trades are a great option for many Australians and for young women, it can be a particularly rewarding and lucrative career. So today we are delving into the subject that I'm very passionate about and believe that we all need to grasp an opportunity that presents to advocate and encourage young women to pursue a career as a skilled tradesperson. Now, one such young lady who did just that is Hasia Atherton, who is at CPA, an industry thought leader in Courage. And she is very passionate about how positive psychology can empower the next generation of leaders to achieve their remarkable potential. Now, as an entrepreneur, Hasia focuses on inspiring people to overcome their adversities through her courage, coaching, and speaking. As the founder of Empowered Women in Trades, her passion for courageous leadership through empowerment continues to inspire people across the industries, and in particular, women navigating their professional development within skilled trades. Now, Hasia envisions a future where women are inspired to take up apprenticeships in skilled trades such as welding, plumbing, electrical, automotive, and many more pathways that women have never felt were an option. Now, she values that these women feel safe at work and return home feeling fulfilled from work they have done. Hasia's own story is of courage and one hell of an inspiring and heartfelt journey where she is most passionate about empowering women in trades and seeing more women in the workforce with meaningful economic opportunities and skills. You are listening to the Kick-Ass Radio Show Kickstart, where we talk about all things women working in non-traditional roles in varied male-dominated industries, and we tell you how it is. I'm your host, Jo Sainsbury, the Glow Getter, I hope we can keep you in good company today and over the coming hour. And a huge shout out to all the women working out on track and on site today all over the globe. Stay safe and have a fantastic day or night shift. And this might also be a good time for a trigger warning that today's radio show may and does contain some adult language. Let's get into it. Hello, Hosea. And welcome to Kick-Ass Radio. Firstly, thank you for coming on the show and for sharing some of your valuable time with us, especially when we know you're on holidays up in Port Douglas.
I am. I escaped the Melbourne winter for a couple of weeks to come up in Port Douglas, but doing this kind of stuff I don't consider work, so I still feel like I'm on holiday here having a chat with you.
Excellent. Well, thank you again. I know you're super busy. But I also know that we're going to have a great conversation and enjoy your company today. So to kick things off, tell us a bit about yourself and your career as a CPA and entrepreneur thus so far.
Yeah, so my career's gone all over the shop. I graduated from Wrighton down in Melbourne, and I actually got into law. And after working in Owen Dixon Chambers and having a look at the commercial law landscape, because I wanted to be a commercial law barrister, and at the ripe age of, 18, 19, it was a heavily male-dominated industry, and the way female barristers were not were treated was really, really bad. So I kind of shied off that career path. It's really ironic what I'm doing now, but I'm 34, I'm a lot older, I'm a lot tougher. So then I went into psychology, management, marketing, and that's where my love for psychology started. And then I actually got academically burnt out for a bit, and I left and did a year of fashion design, which was pretty random, but absolutely awesome. And it was really
interesting. Definitely an opposite end of the spectrum there, hey?
Yeah, it was really interesting. I've always been creative. I guess that's the entrepreneurial mindset. I've always loved fashion. So it was interesting to spend a year in that industry and seeing what that world was like. Very different to trades world, I can tell you that. And then I went off and did my financial planning qualifications, and I became a financial planner. I only lasted a year in that industry because my personal values just really did not align with the industry. Welcome the Royal Commission, and everything that happened there kind of highlighted a lot of the stuff that I had wrong and trouble with in the industry. Again, a very male-dominated industry, and pretty hard to be a woman in that industry. So then I went back to the family company. So my family company manufactures medical infection control equipment. My family came over here in 1889 as plumbers in Melbourne, and my great-great-grandfather was one of the founding contractors of the Master Plumbers Association, which was pretty awesome. So I went back to the family company and rocked around from different roles to a service coordinator for our techs and some sales and customer service roles, and then started doing my Bachelor of Commerce majoring in accounting and became a CPA and worked my way up to the chief commercial officer of the company. And my dad was awesome because he's like, now you've got all your academic qualifications and stuff, go and learn what it's like to be in the factory. So he put me in the factory for a few months leading up to, unfortunately, which I'll get to, I had a bad horse riding accident because I was a very high level dressage rider as well at the time. And I was training to go to the World Equestrian Games. But yeah, so I got in the factory and I was 29 at the time, and mate, I fell in love with welding. You wouldn't have thought it, but once I got into the welding bays and got the gloves and the welding helmet on and everything and did my first weld, I was absolutely in love. Unfortunately, had a massive hex debt, had a mortgage, had all this kind of stuff, so I couldn't go off and do a welding apprenticeship. It's something I still want to do one day, is to go do my welding apprenticeship. But it really opened my eyes to, hey, women can do this. Like, I tried every trade in the factory, fitter and turner, welders, sheet metal welders, electrical, all those trades, and I could do it all. Yeah, not fantastic. I was starting and learning, but I could do every single one of the trades that the guys in the factory did. which really opened my eyes to, hey, girls can do this and love it. When I went back into the office and was faced with spreadsheets and computer programs and everything, I just wanted to get back into the factory. So that kind of led to establishing Empowered Women in Trades to open up the pathway and opportunities for women to experience that. And if they fall in love with the tools, that's fantastic.
And it is, that's such a leap from finance, tools and literacy to tools and schematics or blueprints literacy. Like, it is, and it's a great feeling. I know myself from coming from corporate background and getting out into a mechanical side of things, you don't look back, hey, and you think, well, where have I been all this time? Why didn't I do this earlier? So to have that that light bulb moment, and that's why we encourage women to go and pursue these skilled trades days and try them. Get themselves on the tools and they'll be very surprised at how empowering that is and what a good, great feeling it can provide. And then the mind, the curiosity and the creativity comes from that, saying exactly, I can do this, or I want to follow it up and go for it. So it's a great journey that you've done with your career so far. So we congratulate you on that. But also, as you said, your journey is one that's been fraught with many life's challenges. So tell us how your courage and resilience became such important values in your life and career.
Yeah, so as I was saying, when I was working in the factory at 29, very high-level dressage rider, and I was training with my coach, and my young horse, she actually reared up vertically and I came off and she landed on top of me, all 600 kilos. So it was a pretty life-threatening accident. I got airlifted to Alfred Hospital down in Melbourne, and I got informed that I'd badly broken both of my hips. I pretty much crushed my pelvis, had breaks at the bottom of my coccyx, as well as like severe nerve damage to my right leg, bladder, and stomach as well. So basically, our bodies don't like 600 kilos landing on top of them from height. I was conscious the whole time, so I remember everything that happened as well. And after a couple of days, because they had to wait for the swelling to go down before they could do surgery on me, as well as finding a very specialist orthopedic surgeon to be able to deal with what was going on in my crushed pelvis. But I woke up from that surgery, almost a 9-hour surgery, being told by the medical team that I'll probably never walk again in any meaningful way. And from being a high-level athlete that loved her running and her swimming and her bike riding and her horse riding and everything like that, to be looking at a life where I may not walk again, I was pretty heartbreaking and really mentally tough to deal with. So I went into a really dark place, and I was in hospital for 6 months. Three of those months was pretty much in a bed, in a wheelchair. I was in adult diapers. I turned 30 in adult diapers in hospital with no control over my bladder. And you go into a pretty dark place, and I had really bad depression. I had really bad anxiety. I had just really lost hope that life was something that I could live and enjoy. I just thought I was going to have to survive it. And I came across positive psychology and started to understand the concepts of courage and resilience and positive mindset and the power of positive self-talk over that negative self-talk. And step by step, I taught myself to stand again. I started to teach myself to walk again. And after those 6 months, I actually walked out of the hospital room on my walker and everything like that. But I managed to do it. And since then, I've run a half marathon, which the doctors still don't understand medically how I managed to do that. Because I've had 20 surgeries since then. I've got two more surgeries this year, one of which will be a hip replacement. I've got two computers inside me that work with all of the nerve damage and everything inside my body and things like that. So, but yeah, each surgery I get back up, I get on my feet one step at a time and go smash it out.
Oh, phenomenal. It's an absolutely remarkable story. And congratulations to you. And exactly that, we can't imagine, or I couldn't imagine, the mental hardship and mindset change that you had to go through, and how it's a testament there that the change in mindset and the positive outcomes that come out of that change in mindset, and you've definitely shown that there. So a very tough journey to live through, but great milestones and achievements now, even though we are looking at you, and you've just said you've got two computers inside you. So how do you go through the airport body scan there?
Yeah, I'm not allowed to. I've got like a little card that obviously explains the technology that I have inside me. So they take me and pat me down and make me take my shoes and everything off and put all that through the scanners. But I can't go through the scanners myself. So, yeah, got to get to the airport a little bit earlier to deal with these nuances. But I'd rather get to an airport earlier and be able to walk than not get to the airport earlier. So, yeah.
And it's great to see that through your courage and your resilience, how successfully you've turned a major life trauma into a triumph. So inspiring audiences across Australia with your transformative success is a relative concept which must constantly be redefined, and that advancement in life is largely based on your ability to implement, you know, incremental goals, that's what you promote and you encourage. So, yes, major milestones come from the hard work and in a change of mindset. And we all go through some pretty dark periods in our lives, and I can say that I did too. And it's become, you know, your darkest hour can become your catalyst for your most memorable and positive outcomes. I think
definitely without that shift in mindset, I truly believe I still would be in a wheelchair or working with all my walking aids and things like that. Our mind is the most powerful resource and asset that we have,
and it is. And until people realize that, as much as they say, oh yeah, I want to do this, I want to do this, but this is holding you back, you've really got to change that mindset, because until you do, you will hold yourself back and you won't achieve what you want to achieve without that.
Yeah, and like when I was learning to walk again, like if I doubted myself, I had the whole medical team saying, you're not going to do this. Every day you'd have to put goals up, and my goal would be transfer from my wheelchair to a car, or learn how to put my clothes on myself without the nurse helping me. And number three was always walking, and they were all like, you're really setting yourself up to fail by putting that up there. I'm like, nah, I'm going to do it. I'm going to work it out, you know. So it's that mindset and that self-belief, even when people are doubting you.
Exactly. And I think that's for me too, that's determination. It's like, you're saying I can't do it. Well, I am going to do it. I think you also need that, don't you, to feed that determination to say, I'm going to show them I'm going to do it.
100%.
Okay, so can you describe the aha moment, and I think you might have already said that, in your career path, when you did decide to pursue those skilled trades? So it was obviously on the factory floor. And how did you start thinking about your own business projects in that same going in that same direction? Was it just from working on the floor and gaining that experience in the factory?
It was a combination of a bunch of things. So obviously having that lived experience and my love for trades, and particularly the welding trades and metal-based trades. I love, my husband's a farrier, so I get to play around with his old horseshoes and get to muck around with that. So I have a deep love for metal-based trades particularly. And also through uni, one of my research projects was always around the financial hardship of Australian women and what was happening there. And I've always kept a very keen eye on it, because it's just heartbreaking. A lot of the statistics out there that are happening, especially with COVID, we're seeing the really high rates of homelessness among Australian women in their 40s and 50s. And the trend is not going in the right direction, in my opinion, because it's actually increasing. And then also the skill shortage, being in a trade-based manufacturing company and family, I'd always looked at the skill shortage that was happening in Australia and, again, trending in the wrong direction with decreasing apprenticeship rates, but also increasing workload in construction, manufacturing, mining, et cetera. And for a long time, we relied on imported labour to fill these
gaps.
Absolute vital roles to keep Australia going. To, you know, the trades are the backbone of Aussie. If we don't have tradies, we don't have our economy, our country, anything like that. It wasn't until I experienced trades myself that I put the financial hardship of Australian women and the skill shortage of Australia together and go, hey, why don't we bring these two things together? Tradies earn awesome money. This could stop these women ending up on the streets or having to make the decisions if they feed their kids or feed themselves, or having to make that heartbreaking decision if they do find themselves pregnant that they can't afford a second child or a third child, and having to end that pregnancy because of poverty and financial hardship. Where if they got into a trade, if they loved a trade and had an opportunity to be a tradie, they don't have to make some of these really heartbreaking decisions.
Yeah. And that's right. And financial literacy is such an important skill on its own to get a grip on, and we should promote that more. There should be more resources and avenues for in education pathways to actually instill that literacy into the young women, so they go and leave school with that skill already in their pockets, and they can take it out in their career and learn from that and manage themselves so much better. But as you said, the state of our country with homelessness at the moment, in particular women, domestic violence, is just so alarmingly out of control, and we need so much more heightened awareness and aid in all those areas. So if we can help encourage women to take on these jobs and to pursue the apprenticeships and make a life for themselves, financial independence, security, and a livelihood, that would be tremendous. So the more
exactly, like, you know how hard it is to find a tradie. There's job security out there. I know there's the transient workforce, especially construction. You know, the job gets finished, is there going to be another job? At the moment, yes, the pipeline for all the infrastructure, commercial, domestic, there's work for years and years and years to come for tradies. But same, like, I know how hard it is to get a tradie to come around if you've got a broken toilet or some electrical things. They're really hard to find at the moment because of the skill shortage. So there is job security out there for women, probably more job security than in cleaning positions or your typical female roles.
Yeah, that's right. And like, creativity and innovation have the added benefit of being extremely important when building a resilient and flexible business, and this is crucial for all industries going forward. So encouraging higher female participation in the trade industries and in the uptake of apprenticeships or traineeships doesn't only help to combat the future skills shortages, it can also create new opportunities for women to deal with this unique economic opportunity that's out in front of them. Like we said, a business startup, how awesome is that? You know, to see a lot more female-owned trade businesses turning up to the job site in their utes, in their work utes, with the tools.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you can do that. Once you're a fully qualified tradeswoman, you can be a mum that works between drop-off and pick-up. You're booking own clients, you're booking in your own jobs. Mm. Yeah, you've got to earn your stripes, and for a while you have to work for someone. But once you're at a point of a skill set within your trade that you can go out on your own, you can have that flexibility to be able to be an active mum as well as earning really good money. You can do, you know, work on the weekends and different things like that. There is so much flexibility at a certain point in your career within trades, obviously. First year apprentices, not so much, but just the same at uni. You know, you can't go and walk into a courtroom at first year law. You've got to earn your stripes. And trades is, in my opinion, just another 4-year degree. You take a 4-3 years degree, depending what trade you're doing. You earn your stripes, you become qualified, and then you can call your own shots.
That's exactly right. And we do, and we all have to earn our stripes, and you have to earn that respect. But you need to take that time to actually absorb all the industry knowledge and experience from your co-workers. So if you have a great team, and particularly the older aging workforce that you're working with, if they have the knowledge and the skills to pass down to you, that's a great learning experience, and you need to grasp those. And as you might take an extra year or 2 years to stay in that role after you finish your apprenticeship, just to get that extra bit of upper hand knowledge and trade experience from that workforce, then you step out and you're so much more confident in your industry knowledge that you can progress at a at a speed that you're comfortable with on your own then.
Exactly. And even specialise in stuff like, I know with my husband, after a 4-year apprenticeship as a farrier, yeah, you can do basic stuff and racehorses and things like that, but you don't have the skill set to do really high level surgical work for horses that need special shoes, or really understanding the movement of a dressage horse and what kind of shoes it needs to improve its movement and things like that. That takes another, 3-4 years as well. So if you can stay under a really skilled tradesperson for those extra years after your apprenticeship and pick up those specialised skills, which again in a lot of metal trades there's really specialised skills set as well, you become so invaluable.
That's so true. That is correct. So can you recall any times when you questioned your involvement in the trades industry because of your gender? Have you had any role models or mentors to help you out along the way?
I'm very lucky to have such an incredible community of men and women around me. And, yeah, there's been times, certain things that have been said to me on site that have rocked me a little bit. It hasn't made me question what I'm doing. It's made me even more passionate about it. But, yeah, it's definitely made me question myself. It's definitely made me question humanity in general, some of the stuff that's that has been said to me. But it's led me down a really interesting path. So I'm doing a Master's of Applied Positive Psychology at uni at moment. And what I'm really researching in and understanding a lot is around masculinity and the different styles of masculinity that's out there, your more traditional masculinity, all the way to more positive and inclusive masculinity. And what I've started to uncover and see is, even with the guys out there, there's a lot of gender conflict between how a trade site expects a man to act and be sexist towards women, have anti-feminine behavior, and this more traditional male mindset that men are better than women. But then out in society or at home or anything like that, they operate a lot more with empathy and compassion, or demonstrate more feminine styles of characteristics. And this is really confusing for guys. So some of the men that have lashed out to me on site, when I sit there and think about it, I'm like, wow, they must be going through so much frustration and fear and uncertainty. And this is a really scary time for guys as well, with women coming into their man's world and bringing a different skill set to trades. Women do trades different to men. We're built different. We think different. We walk, talk, act different. So we're bringing something different, which is not necessarily better. It's just different. So what the poor treatment I've experienced has really been good in a way, because it's made me dig deeper into what's going on within the minds and the psychology of a lot of guys out there. And we know there's a big mental wellbeing issue for men in trades as well. And I think it comes back to a lot of this conflict that they feel of how they should walk, talk, and act on site versus how they should walk, talk, and act in society.
And that's right. And there is a lot of social expectations around the gender. You know, the manual trades are seen as masculine professions, which means the young women generally don't consider careers in these fields because of that stereotypical perception. And the perception of the macho workplace culture is, you know, has always been in the trade industries, and that they thrived on the competition and the intimidation, and they often, you know, bullied and harassed. So gone are the days of the sexist joke and the foul language or the chauvinistic attitudes, we would hope, but there is still a lot of education in that sense as well. And there's also, there's been a turnaround, I think, in the older men now fearing working with the younger generation, the younger women, because of all the innuendo, or you know, they're afraid to have a bit of a joke with their work colleagues now, if they are particularly, you know, the younger women, because they're frightened of they're going to say the wrong thing, or they're going to be offended. So it's kind of turned a bit of a full circle there. It's been accepted to a certain degree, but now it's coming to a point where they're stepping back, and it could be a bit of mental health issue there too, that they're not game to say anything or act, you know, in a certain way around the young women in their workplace.
No, and this is where, as women, and I do step up and do my best to re-educate men on site, because they've been taught to create mateships through humour that is highly derogative or discriminative towards women. So for a long time, that's actually how they were taught to form bonds and friendships and mateships, which is a very key psychological need that we need to have that belonging. So the male strength of humour is actually a fantastic strength for men to have. They've just got to understand how to use that in the right way. And I use an example of a professional fighter. So his strength is boxing. He's really good at punching things and punching people. When he's in a professional ring, that's fine to use that strength in that way. When he's at the gym, it's fine to use his strength that way. When he's outside the pub and someone's giving him lip, it's not fine to use his strength and punch that guy in the face. So just like humor is a male strength, it's absolutely fine to use it. It's just, how do you use it and how do you change it to be appropriate for the situations? And, yeah, when there is a woman on site, using her as a vehicle for your humour is not appropriate. It doesn't mean that you can't crack a joke. It just means you can't crack a joke and use her as your vehicle for your humour.
That's right. And D&I has never been more important than now. So the acceptability of certain behaviours, it all comes back to education too. There's a lot to be said there, and we still have a lot of work to do with that. But I see in some areas, as I said, it's gone full circle. It's gone to not being acceptable to being acceptable, and now they're on the receiving end of being, you know,
uncomfortable.
that's the right word. That's exactly the right word. Uncomfortable. They're uncomfortable in the presence of the younger female workforce. So it's we've got lots of work to do in that area in all facets of it.
And very much so.
I've lost my train of thought there, but anyway, we'll continue on. We might take a little break, actually, and listen to one of our sponsors' adverts, and we'll come back shortly.
Hey, Glowgetters. Have you heard about Kick-Ass Women? Founded by Jo Sainsbury, Kick-Ass Women is dedicated to empowering and supporting women who are considering a career change into an industry role. Visit our brand-new website at www.kickasswomen.com.au or follow Kick-Ass Women on Facebook and LinkedIn today to keep up to date with all things Kick-Ass Women and the incredible opportunities and content we have for you. See you there, Glowgetters.
Thanks for tuning back in, and we are chatting to Hasia Atherton, the founder of Empowered Women in Trades. So, Hasia, introduce us to EWIT. Empowered Women in Trades, and tell us what it's all about. Walk us through some of the fantastic programs and services that you're offering and how best they can work, not only for women and the young girls, but more so for the business organisations in particular, how they can get involved.
Yeah. So I've really taken a whole system approach to this, and we've got a range of different products and services that focus on the attraction of women into trades, but also the retention and promotion. We want these women to come in as apprentices and end up, not just even stay, end up as for people or factory managers and progressing to leadership roles within our trade-based industries as well. Over time, it takes time to get the skill set, but we really want to partner with them through that whole journey. So if we're looking in the attraction phase, we've got our Trade Academy programs, which consists of a one-day tool skills day where women get to learn a whole bunch of pos-psych mindset stuff around, yeah, resilience, how to speak up, how to stand up for themselves in a non-aggressive way, in a way that actually builds trust, builds relationships and builds productive relationships in the workplace. And then they get their hands on the tools and have a crack at a range of different trades that we're showcasing within that day. If they're keen to keep going at that some point, some women are like, yeah, I want to go do a pre-apprenticeship or an apprenticeship and jump straight into it. Some women are still uncertain and some women just go, nah, it wasn't for me, which is great because they've learned something even through that experience. So it's for the women that want to keep progressing and a bit uncertain maybe around what trade they want to get into. We've got a longer program called Experience Trade, and depending what industry we're working with, that could be a one-week program up to a three-week program where you get your white cards and everything like that. And the concept of that program is we do really deep dive in human skills, positive psychology. So you spend a whole day learning a whole bunch of that kind of stuff. And then you get to experience, three to four different trades at TAFE or an RTO and see what your life at school is going to be like and understand there is schoolwork, there is, assignments, there's reading, there's classroom stuff that you have to do, as well as where your skill set's going to go. So day one, you'll come in not knowing how to strip wires. Last day, you'll be wiring up circuit boards, et cetera, et cetera. And then we do, depending on the style of the program, some of their ticketed qualifications, so their white cards, if we're doing something in civil construction particularly, so that they can get boots on ground on the civil sites. And the last part of the program is exactly that, boots on ground, employer experiences, going out and seeing what that trade looks like in real life. And then we finish with a bit of a networking, meet the industry, get the local employers in to have a networking breakfast with the participants. And if they're looking for apprentices, plumbing apprentices, the participants are really keen to get into plumbing, then hopefully they can have a really productive conversation. And the last day of that program, we do kind of work readiness stuff. How do you write a resume and a cover letter for trade-specific kind of roles as well, and just help them prep a little bit for trade-specific style interviews for their apprenticeships as well. So that's looking at the participants, and then we're just about to launch our trade network as well, where they can become members of that, and we provide ongoing education around positive psychology, marketing, if you want to be an Instagram influencer throughout your trade, how do you do that? And that is a co-ed membership thing. So we also start connecting them if they want some mentors to help them throughout their trades. That's not their employer. If they're really struggling with something in their trade at their employer, they can reach out to the trade network and get another tradesperson to help them refine their skill sets as well as that career progression, so that they hear about those jobs that are being talked about around around some stubbies at the pub while they're watching footy and things like that. The women might not be in that environment, but through the trading network, they'll get to hear about it through our networking events. And then we transition into looking at more our employer programs. So for a lot of our employers that are a little bit nervous about employing a tradeswoman, we've got different cultural uplift or cultural renovation programs to come in and have a chat to go through a lot of that discomfort, whether it's do we have the right HR policies in place for a woman, to talking to the guys about, yeah, it's fine to feel uncomfortable about this, it's fine to be fearful about it. Let's talk through that and give you some resources. For example, if the girl's got a difficult name, some people struggle with my name. Don't call me love, just say, yes. Hey, I'm really struggling with your name. Can I call you H or can I call you Hayes? Or is there something else that I could call you because I keep forgetting your name or I really struggle to pronounce it? 100%. I'll be like, call me Hayes or H or whatever. But a lot of guys who are uncomfortable just call them love or hun, yeah. And that creates a bad situation. So, yeah, for employers, we do do that, and a bunch of pos psych human skills stuff for the male tradies as well, just around how do you have productive conversations, like how do you actually have a conversation instead of fighting with each other about something that happened on site, how do you have an empowering conversation that is productive for everyone on site instead of just screaming at each other or yelling at each other or swearing at each other.
Usually over something so minor and trivial, isn't it? Like, you know.
Exactly. And when that does happen, a lot of the resources we give to employers is, yeah, that self-awareness piece to go through and be like, okay, why did I blow up? What am I actually angry or frustrated about? What's actually going on? Why did I blow up over you know, going to Bunnings and forgetting to pick up a part and doing things like that. So that real self-awareness and just having emotional intelligence, really, and creating a brave space for the men to really lean into and feel safe to start expressing some more emotional intelligence.
Excellent, excellent resource and excellent outreach programs that you're offering. And I know women need that support. So having a network like EWIT, it's such a tremendous fallback, because we're not good at supporting each other, but I think we can be so much better at it, and we need to be. And having that network, it can really help the women feel empowered and worthy in their field, and it builds a welcoming community, as you said, where they build that comfortable atmosphere, and they can come in and ask for help. And that's the number one thing. The confidence, they've built the confidence to come in and say, hey, see, I'm struggling with this. Do you know someone that can help me out in this field? So they need to utilize such networks and communities like these in their trades and in their careers for so much more 100%. Than yeah.
Like, for so many, like the boys' club does it so well. The boys are really great lifting each other up and supporting each other in so many ways. And a lot of women feel so alone in their trades. And, yeah, there might not be another tradeswoman in that particular trade around you. Like, you might be a chippy and you're the only chippy in that area, but there'll be sparkies or plumbers or welders or different things like that. And that's what we want to do, is bring all that together, because regardless of your trade, like, there'll be nuances to your specific trade, but a lot of the self-doubt, a lot of the other mental and emotional things that you're going through in your apprenticeship, everyone feeling alone and isolated, other women are going through that as well. So to have that community to talk through a lot of the psychological things that you go through, and apprenticeship's hard, you stuff up, you fail, and you're on the clock, you're on a client site, you're getting paid to do all of this. So male or female, there's a lot of psychological stuff that you go through of doubting yourself when you're doing an apprenticeship, and that's just being an apprentice.
That's right. That's exactly right. So with being involved in that industry, that male-dominated industry, how did you become so passionate about diversity and inclusion? Did it derive from a particular experience that you had?
There's been some personal experiences that I've had. I've lost some friends to suicide, which has been pretty tough. And as well, I've had some friends that, because there was a woman on site and they were able to go talk to her about certain things that were happening, and she was able to read some body language that was happening on site between two particular guys, I managed to talk them all through it and things like that. A situation that could have been really, really bad actually turned around, and they're all really good mates now because of that female that had a different view on it, could pick up body language, could see what was happening when one guy said something to another guy, could see his body language and see he was not okay with all of that. So I think it's so incredibly powerful having that diversity for our mental well-being, and I think it's going to be a great way to turn around the terrible statistics we're seeing in suicide within male tradies, and it's the suicide rate among male tradies is higher than any other occupation or industry in Australia. but also like for businesses, you see the benefits for productivity, for innovation, to move things forward. And I think the D&I is low in trades in every single country in Australia. Like the UK, it's lower than Australia. The US, it's really low. So I'm super excited because Australia was the world leader or second country in the world to give women the right to vote in 1902. And I see this as an incredible opportunity for Australia to be a world leader again in increasing the diversity within trades, therefore increasing innovation, probably developing new tools, new ways to do things. And we might be a little dot on the map, but I think this is an incredible opportunity for us to be a world leader again.
Excellent. And it is, and there's so much creativity and curiosity within so many women that they aren't taking that risk and letting it, you know, exploring it. So many more need to be much more curious about things there, you know, they've got a general talent, a natural talent at.
Exactly. And it could be just curious around work boots or, you know, work trousers, or it could be curious around developing different kinds of materials or products or things like that. There is so much room for innovation and advancement in our trade-based industries on how we do things, our clothes and everything like that. So I think with having more minds around a problem, we're going to look at different ways of solving things and different ways of improving things as well. Just because we've always done something the same way forever and a day doesn't mean it's the best way to do it.
That's right. And like for women working in the industries, in many industries, you know, inequality is the absence of a female toilet in your workplace. Inequality is having to wear a uniform that doesn't fit, and that becomes a safety issue then. Inequality is the sexual harassment and the absence of effective policies to deal with it all. So it's regardless of how progressive our ideas about gender are, we need to take notice of the presence of all those female plumbers, female construction workers, female mechanics, because we would, not because we would doubt their skills, but simply because they're the minority in the workshop, and we need to improve that inequality and make it, as you said, make it the norm. Make it the make the norm that it's not the past mindset or
And it's just, and as you said, it's the little things. Like if you are an employer that is listening to this and you do have a female on your site or at your workshop, just check to see if you've got a sanitary bin. You don't have to go build a whole new toilet for her, but just check that you have a sanitary bin, because the amount of stories I've heard of women having to put, you know, their pads or their tampons in their pockets or their lunch boxes or things like that. Like, come on, we're Australia. We're not a third world country. So if you're an employer that employs a woman and doesn't cost that much, it's not going to break the bank, you know, and get a sanitary bin. It's a very small thing, but it's a really powerful and meaningful thing for your female employees in that space. So just little things like that. You don't have to renovate your whole workshop.
That's right. And it is, it's, you know, to improve inequality, it's critical that these roles evolve and more women are encouraged to go in, because the evolution has occurred in these workplaces. So yeah, as you said, they're not budget breaking items. They're not budget breaking improvements. They're just little things that can make such a big difference.
Yeah, and the productivity that you'll probably get out of someone that feels seen and valued without having to say, hey, can we get a sanitary bin in here? Because no woman wants to have that conversation with their employer. It's not a comfortable conversation to have. But rocking up to work and seeing it there goes, wow, they see me, they understand me. Like, you're going to get her doing an extra 5 minutes here or finishing off the job and not putting through that overtime and different things like that. So if you, as an employer, you invest that little bit more. Or a story I got told the other day of a woman who was on trial, and the guy refused to pull over and let her go to the toilet. She had a very heavy period flow. She needed to go to the toilet every couple of hours, and he refused to let her go. And she felt absolutely mortified and horrified. I actually called up this employer and at the end of the day, he felt mortified and horrified because he didn't understand, and he thought she just, you know, wanted to get on Instagram, on the toilet, or just, you know, all that kind of stuff. So one, it's important that we have these conversations and men understand that, yeah, sometimes women need to go to the toilet a little bit more than a guy.
Yeah.
But that's just, look at that. At the end of the day, a woman gave birth to these guys. If we're not having our periods, we're not having babies, then the human race dies. So if we have to go to the toilet a little bit more, then so be it.
That's exactly right. So there's yeah, those, as we said, those little things that can make such a huge difference.
100%. Just don't question a woman when she needs to go to the toilet and have a sanitary bin. Changed so much for so many women out there on sites or in workshops.
Definitely. So why is the skilled trades industry so important? How can we best strategize, focus, or implement an action further education and skills to reinforce the opportunities within so many sectors for skilled tradespersons? What's your thoughts on that?
So I think we need to do a lot more work in schools, all the way down to like junior schools and things like that. Stop positioning trades as some kind of second class citizen job that you're so stupid you can't go to uni, so you've got to go be a tradie, which is absolutely not true. I know so many tradies that are highly intelligent, and yeah, they might not be academically intelligent and don't know how to write a thesis, but they know how to run businesses, they know how to read drawings, they're very intelligent people. So I think we need to change the stigma of trades at schools as well, is very, very important, and highlight how much trades do for our society. We could have all the doctors in the world, but if we didn't have tradies to build hospitals and maintain hospitals, where are those doctors going to do their surgery? On the side of the road or on a dirt road? Or again, that we wouldn't even have dirt roads if we didn't have tradies, you know?
Right, yeah. That's exactly right. Like a lack of credible and comprehensive information about what working in trades actually involves, because trades were often seen as options for students with low grades. And it's simply not true. And it can be very damaging, and it has been very damaging and misleading, hasn't it?
Very misleading. And like, I'm a CPA. I know a lot of tradies that earn more than accountants out there as well. So like, there is a lot of financial benefits to becoming a tradie versus going down the academic route. And there's a lot of tradies that live fantastic lives, not as stressed as a lot of people I know that have office-based jobs. So I think definitely as parents as well, taking the pressure off your kids to go to uni is really important, and opening up career paths where your child will thrive and succeed. And that's that child playing to their strengths. If they love being outside all the time, if they're really hands-on kids, if they don't like to sit still for very long, why send them off to university and force them to sit in front of a computer for the rest of their lives? Put trades in front of them. Go let them explore that option, because that's going to be the best and happiest and most fulfilling career path for your child. So I think schools and parents really need to start changing their mindset about what's right for our younger generations when it comes to careers.
And there's another aspect to that too, is they can go and do their trade, and once they've done their trade, then they can go and, you know, explore and experiment with so many other industries and businesses if that was where their original thought, you know, of uni study was. But then they can do engineering degrees. They can do so many more degrees in different sectors.
Yeah, exactly.
They're working and, you know, and professionally develop on their trade. So there's ample opportunity to build.
100%. Yeah. Well, you look at the CEO of Tickford Racing.
Yeah.
He was an apprentice and he's managed F1 race teams. Now he's the CEO of Tickford Racing. He started off as an apprentice. Like, just because you start your career on the tools doesn't necessarily mean you're going to die on the tools either. And I know so many good project managers in construction that used to be tradies themselves, and they're so good at their jobs because they understand what happens on site.
Mm. That's exactly right. And it's all about putting those key words together of the industries, like build, design, build, create, and innovate. Like they all work hand in hand.
Exactly, very much so. And from the architects or the engineers that are sitting and going over drawings and things like that to the tradies on the ground, I know very much in the manufacturing space, the engineers and the draftsmen can draw up the most perfect machine in the world, and then it goes to the factory floor and it just doesn't work.
That's exactly the tradesman
on the factory floor that is like, this is not going to be possible, or it doesn't work that way, or it's not going to be strong enough. And then they give the feedback back. It's the collaboration between the engineers and draftsmen and the tradesmen who are actually building it all in that innovation cycle as well. And I think that's a really important thing for businesses and society to understand, is not to overlook the trades. And when you are going through design and build processes, ask the opinions of the tradies. They're the ones that are boots on ground closest to whatever it is that you're going to create, and they'll have invaluable feedback as well. So industry needs to stop looking at tradies as just the lackeys that put together what they tell them to, because they've got a wealth of knowledge that I think industry is not really tapping into at the moment as well.
That's right. Wealth of knowledge and wealth of insight. As you said, they have the hands on, they have the mechanics in their head. You know, they can see how it works or how it's not worked. They know textures, they know material risk, they know material handling. They know so much from being hands on. And when they see a design come out, they can say, you know, they know straight away just by looking at the drawing, oh, that's not going to work because of this. You know, that won't hold that weight. You know, if that bucket on that loader's got to hold that concrete, well, that concrete's too heavy for that bucket or whatever. But they can see, you know, straight away from working in hands-on what does and does not work, rather than just...
I understand.
So, yes, lots there. But, yeah, I think I agree there. We definitely need to start at the junior school and educate our educators that it's definitely a very well worth industry to pursue, and it's not just for the kids that aren't, you know, great academics. It's for everyone.
100%. Male, female, you know, very good at academia, not very good at academia. The skill sets that you need is to enjoy being active, you know, good with your hands, good dexterity. Like, there's a whole range of skill sets that make you a good tradie, and they have nothing to do with your academic prowess or your gender.
That's right. So provide a firm framework for success, and we'll have so many more skilled tradespeople out there. No, coming straight out of school, so what should a good workplace culture look like from your perspective then? What are the top three things businesses within the trades industry can do to be more inclusive for females?
Yeah, so number one is definitely around toileting and toileting facilities, and just making sure that the like trades is all around physical safety and having a physical environment that supports your employees. So ensure that physical environment supports all aspects of a female as well, I think is very, very important. And number two is definitely around valuing a holistic kind of range of personality traits as well. So yeah, having that kind of stoic self-reliance, all that kind of stuff is great in some situations, but often we need to have a bit more empathy and compassion as well. So having an environment that rewards masculine and feminine traits that are presenting in men and women. Mm-hmm. So a man that is showing empathy towards another colleague, don't call him a wimp, or don't say, oh, look at you caring about that person. Like, don't bully the guys as well when they are showing concern or compassion or feminine traits. As likewise, don't expect women to show up and act macho as well. So I think having that mindset where you reward and value other traits as well. And coming down to just building teams, focus on communicating, focusing on understanding as an employer what is the strengths of every person in your team and allowing them to play to those strengths within their trade, within their personality types. So if the female does have good customer service skills, get her greeting the clients when they drop off the car, get her handing the car back over to them if that works well for her, or if she's a really strong woman and can put tires on and off trucks and cars or do things like that, don't say, no, you can't do that because you're a girl. If she's strong or that's her strength, let her do it. Vice versa, if a guy's very good at customer service, don't tell him that he has to do all the tires because the chick's going to welcome people. So understand the strength, the technical, emotional, you know, personality dynamics. Strengths of your team. Mm.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Dynamic teamwork, and it's each, you know, structure their teams based on the skills and attributes of each and every one, because each and every one can teach their skills and attributes to the other. So what you're good at, you can teach me, and what I'm good at, I can, you know, reciprocate and teach you. So those dynamic workforces and teams are a must. And it's important that we change the perceptions, like I said, that women shouldn't just try to fit in and be one of the boys. We don't want that. Be yourself, always be yourself. And take on accountability and ownership and accept responsibility, and then output, you know, as you said, empathy, creativity. We're all so good at that, but don't make that your go-to thing for the employer.
Exactly. And look, the thing around showing up as your authentic self, that's how you're going to build trusting relationships. Male or female, if you're hiding something, people start to not trust you, but just subconsciously. So a big example for me, I'm actually a little rave bunny. I love trance music. I love going to raves, glow sticks, the full-on thing. In the corporate world, I used to hide that and that, oh, what are you doing this weekend? Oh, you know, just catching up. And I would lie. I would lie about what I was doing, and I didn't say I'm going to some warehouse, rave party, things like that. And it did affect my professional relationships. As soon as I started telling the truth, I felt better in the environment. People felt better around me. My relationships at work just got so much better. So it's important for anyone, and particularly tradespeople, where you need that trust with your colleagues, because it is a dangerous environment. So you need to have a high level of trust with each other. It's essential that we're allowed to be authentic so we can build relationships with our teammates that is based on trust.
That's right. And creating a safe, family-friendly workplace where all employees feel supported and not intimidated. They have that
very
trust.
So,
yeah. Excellent. So what advice would you give to girls interested in pursuing a skilled trade career? What advice would you give to the young women who are already in the trades or questioning their studies?
So for young women or any woman that's interested in getting into the trades, research. If you want to be a sparky or an electrician, have a look at the different types of licenses that are out there, the different industries that are out there, and get a good understanding. Do you want to be in the manufacturing industry? If you want to be in construction, is that civil? Is it commercial? Is it domestic? So really explore all the different avenues that particular trade offers and understand what kind of area within the industry that you want to work with. And then don't necessarily just take the first job or a first trial that's offered to you. Make sure that employer, that team, that environment is right for you. Just like any job, don't feel so grateful that someone's going to give you a trade or someone's going to give you a go. I know it's so hard for women out there to find some trade jobs, and we're working hard on changing that. But you're not going to thrive if you just accept a job because they're box ticking and they want a female because they need to report or they need to meet quotas or things like that. So really make sure that the employer is the right employer for you. And similarly, again, for tradeswomen that are out there, don't give up. It's tough. You've got to be courageous. even if you're with the best team, you might be on site and it might be someone from, you know, another trade or another organisation that treats you really tough or says some really inappropriate stuff to you. And the tradeswomen out there at the moment, you're the trailblazers. You're the ones that are going to be changing it for the generation and generation and generation to come. And, yeah, your names might not be put in history books, but you are literally creating history and paving the way. And it's a heavy load to carry, but you're incredible, courageous, resilient women, and it can be super, super shit. And lean into your networks when you want to give up, but just don't give up because you are the change.
And that's exactly right. And it's we need those women that are in those trades now as the role models, because it's important that the younger ones coming up are exposed to those female role models and that they take part in programs and particularly mentoring programs, buddy systems, networking events like you guys hold, women in trades and businesses. It's so important for the girls to see that all that is possible. And yes, and they need to hear the stories of hardship and challenge. Yes, I had a tough time going through my second year of the apprenticeship. I struggled with this, this and this, but I overcome it, you know. They need to hear all that because everything isn't all rainbows and lollipops and it never will be. And you can't succeed without failure. So we all learn by mistakes. But they need to hear these stories and they need to hear them firsthand. So when we have a skilled tradeswoman that can pass on her story and her milestones and her achievements, what better way to introduce into the industry? Yeah.
As women, we need to celebrate other women a lot more and not tear each other down and not have, you know, shitty comments on social media and all this kind of stuff. Like, girls, just don't do that. Like, don't drag each other down like that. If you've got a problem, do it behind closed doors. If you've got a problem with another tradeswoman, 100% take it up behind closed doors, but stop slamming each other publicly. It's just not cool.
it's not cool, and it reflects back on what kind of person you are then. If that's the way you handle situations, that's not what people want to see, and that's not what employers want to see either. So if you're applying for a job and they go looking at your social media
and they see
comments, that's exactly right. You ain't the one we want, and that's another thing. It's make a list of the needed and desired qualities on your social media. Get rid of stuff that you don't want to share with people. You know, you're venting yourself one day at someone else. Get rid of it all. But always, behave in a most respectful and courteous manner to everyone. Everyone deserves to be treated with respect. So
exactly. And you can always voice your opinions in a respectful way. I've voiced my opinions towards many a man that have treated me or spoken to me in a way that I didn't like, and I did it in a really respectful way. I didn't call them names, I didn't look down on them, I just pushed back and said, pretty much say, is that the way you speak to your daughter and is that the way you speak to your wife?
And that usually is the biggest kick in the guts then, isn't it, when you are like that? Because then it does make them stand back and think,
And look, at the end of the day, if that's the way they're speaking to their daughter and their wife, there's a whole bigger problem at play than me. You know, if they say yes to that question, which no man's actually said yes to that question, but if they ever do, it's like, well, mate, you really need to get some help then.
That's right. So what's your thoughts on women's empowerment in business? Advantages, challenges, opportunities?
Yeah, I think women need to get a lot better at creating the sisterhood and the women's club like there is the boys' club. There's so much that we could learn from men. Men are really good at, you know, if they get a job somewhere, taking their mates with them and lifting their mates up. Women, some of the deepest knives that have been stabbed in my back in my career has been from women. So I think we really need to stop seeing each other as threats or competitions and really start supporting each other a lot more. I think that women shouldn't just be given opportunities because they are a woman. We should be given it on right and merit. That said, the men have been out there doing things a lot longer. So we do need to have kind of programs that allow women to step up into roles and be mentored by men that were in that role and have that changeover, and a woman that shows potential or that she is potentially capable for doing that role, almost sharing that role maybe for 6 months or 3 months with a guy that is very experienced in all of that, so we can upskill women. I think I see so many women that are just given a job that they potentially could succeed in but not quite ready for, and someone has just wanted to box ticks, put a woman in there, and she eventually fails because she wasn't properly supported within that role. So I think we just got to make sure we're putting in proper support, giving women a network, giving women a chance to step up and opening the doors, not because they're a woman, but because they have the right skill set, and then ensure they've got the right education, mentorship, support around her to make sure she thrives in that role.
That's great. That's exactly right. Thanks, Hosea. It's been a great conversation and one that needs to be entered and engaged in and shared over and over again. We'll put your links up in the show to Empowering Women in Trades and on our website for anyone wanting to reach out. Take care and stay safe. Is there anything else you'd like to say before we wrap it up?
No, just such an awesome conversation. I hope people got something out of this, maybe change their mindset around different things. And, yeah, just want to see more women picking up the tools and having a crack at the trades.
That's exactly right. Thank you very much. We look forward to catching up again with you a little later on the year, and we'll see what's happening in the EWIT sector. So we'll hear from another one of our sponsors and we'll round it out. Thanks again, Hosea.
Thank you.
Hey, Glowgetters. Did you know that Jo Sainsbury is a published author for her book High Heels to High Viz and has been named an Amazon number one bestseller? Telling the story about Jo's transition from the corporate sector into industry, High Heels to High Viz acts as a guide for women who are considering a non-traditional role and career. High Heels to High Viz is available for purchase online at all leading bookstores, including Amazon, Dimex, Waterstones and eBay.
Well, that's it, guys. I do hope you've enjoyed our show and our guests. A very big special thank you to Hosea Atherton for sharing all that goodness of empowering women in trades. So much invaluable information with us, and I hope you all have found the information inspiring and that it gives you something to ponder and perhaps feed your curiosity and action over the weekend. So why should you care about women in the trades? What does it matter if less than 1% of your bricklayers are women, or if 99 out of 100 of your welders are men? Well, Hosea and I care a lot about women's place in the skilled trades. Now, the benefits of having women work in the trades goes beyond the narrow interests of employers and well into the good of both women and the economy at large. Women who develop an interest in learning a skilled trade enjoy all the same benefits that men do. Skilled trades hold the promise of higher pay for less investment in uni than most traditionally female fields, such as nursing, financial and education. Like we spoke, you don't have to go to university. The solid benefits and potential for freelance work or for outright self-employment with little cash up front are also a powerful draw for young women who might want to take a few years off to have children in their 20s or their early 30s. And these are some of the most productive years for uni-educated professionals, and taking this time off can seriously hurt a woman's chance of success in those areas. So as trades workers, however, sacrifice of a few years leave is comparatively minor and easy to catch up when the kids are at school. And on a social level, more women in the trades can go a long way toward improving how such work gets done. First, there's the good example of a female bricklayer or machinist sets for other girls who might feel falsely caught between a life as an office clerk. So another benefit is the different perspective women bring from the men to the job itself. While it can be argued there is no female method for wiring up a house or stripping roof tiles, there certainly is a female method for talking the wife of a potential customer into agreeing to have work done in the first place. A woman's point of view can also come in handy if your company's work has an aesthetic aspect to it, such as tile laying or decorative carpentry. In a shop with 9 male cabinet makers, hearing the ideas of a single woman might decisively broaden your offerings and point toward new ways to get things done than you just had a thought of before. So empowering women in trades is on a mission to change young women's lives. If you know a young woman who might be up to the challenge of a career in the trades, you can be a pivotal influence in her life by steering her towards such networks as EWIT. To find out more about the process and how we can help, contact Hosea and the Empowering Women in Trades team today. As more women turn their hands to trade and speak positively about their career choice, it will help other girls consider a career in trades too. And it won't be an overnight change, but if we can all work closer with schools, then we can help to portray how enjoyable and rewarding the skilled trade sector really is. As always, I really appreciate you guys giving me your time to listen to this radio show. You can find more information on this episode with Hosea Atherton and EWIT in the show notes or on my social media pages, or visit my website www.kickasswomen.com.au. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast to get the latest episode sent directly to you. And I'm just absolutely mincing all my words here. Well, that's it. That's all for today's show. Thanks for your company and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass Radio. It's not goodbye, but see you later. Stay safe and well. Keep in touch. Pos comms. Go on, get your glow on. Become a glow-getter.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Kick-Ass Radio, where we kick goals and deliver empowering conversations for women. Want to hear more from Kick-Ass Women and Jo Sainsbury? Visit the Kick-Ass Women website or follow Kick-Ass Women on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram. See you on the next episode of Kick-Ass Radio.